The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Dear Media IRL is back, and we're showing up bigger, better, and louder than ever. Join us on May 4th in Austin, Texas for the ultimate live podcasting experience. Watch and learn from your favorite Dear Media hosts as they bring their insightful discussions from your headphones to the stage. Get ready to be inspired, entertained, and watch audio get a makeover. Tickets are on sale now at dearmedia.com/IRL. See you on May 4th in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm Sif Hyder, the founder of Array. I'm a wellness entrepreneur and digital creator, and this is my show, the Dream Bigger Podcast. Listen, I love dreaming big, but you know what I love more? Actually having the resources to make those big dreams happen. And hey, dreams can sometimes be private jets, but other times they can look a little something like having the best skin of your damn life, or starting a successful business, or delving into spirituality. So on this podcast, I chat with experts and thought leaders from different fields about their tips and tricks on doing exactly that. So let's get right into it.
Hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Dream Bigger Podcast. I am so excited to bring you today's episode because it is jam-packed with such good information on building community, on starting a business, imposter syndrome. Honestly, the list goes on. And of course, today's guest is Deepika Mutyala. She is the founder of Live Tinted, which is an incredible makeup brand. Now, funny story is that when we were starting Array, like way, way back, even before we started Array, I remember Nish sending me this brand and it was Live Tinted. And he was like, look how well they're doing community. I've never seen anything like it. And that was really my first intro to the brand Live Tinted. And honestly, like Deepika has done such a phenomenal job building community. She is so, so inspiring. And I actually had no idea that she was an influencer before starting her brand. I thought she was just an entrepreneur who was also, you know, had like a significant following. And that to me is always like such a compliment when anyone thinks that. So I mean this in the best way possible. And over time, Deepika has become a good friend. And so I'm really excited that we got to have this conversation and bring it to you guys. I know you'll find her so inspiring and you will just learn so much from her. She's just so honest, so authentic, and just such a badass fellow brown woman who I think you guys will love. Okay, so before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to bring you this week's review that comes to us from .BC. And the review says, I have never been a fan of podcasts until now. Sif is a mastermind at tapping into the needs of her audience. Her voice is so soothing and her intelligent, focused questions keep you engaged throughout. I listen after my morning workout and have learned so much. Learning is growth and her shared pearls and insights are life-changing. Oh my gosh, this is so sweet. Her guest speakers are phenomenal. And my favorite episodes are with Kelly Levesque, 247, and Helen Reevy, 251. And I know the list will keep growing. This is such a sweet review and so thoughtful. Thank you so much for leaving this. I cannot tell you how grateful I am. You guys, I can't explain to you how much your reviews mean to me, okay? I'm like gonna go on a tangent for a second. They make my day. They make me feel like I'm doing this for a reason and that I'm hopefully helping you guys even in the smallest way possible. So if you do have a minute and feel like the show has brought you value, I cannot tell you how grateful I would be if you left me a rating and a review. All you have to do is open up the Apple Podcast app, scroll down to the bottom where it says leave a rating and a review. In the rating section, if you feel like I've earned it, please leave me a 5-star rating. And in the review section, honestly, tell me anything. Tell me anything about what you want to hear more of, your favorite episodes, any requests that you have from me. Like I tailor this show for you guys. My entire purpose is to ensure that I'm constantly delivering value and doing the best possible job to grow as a host, to continue to bring you really, really good information that hopefully you guys can apply to your own life. All right, I'm going to stop there. I know that I've gone on a tangent. And with that, let's welcome Deepika to the Dream Bigger Podcast.
We're going to start by talking about expectations around beauty as a brown woman. So I know.
Going right in.
We're going right in. I like to go deep. So we'll go there. I mean, listen, it's two brown girls sitting here.
Totally.
So we gotta touch it.
If not us, then who, right?
Yeah, exactly. So what was your experience growing up? And, you know, now you're this like incredibly successful beauty entrepreneur. But talk to me about your experience with beauty when you were growing up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really does get deep for me because I never saw myself represented. It was literally, it didn't exist. You would go down the makeup aisles and you would see one very specific standard of beauty. They looked a lot like blonde hair, blue eyes. And then you would look at the actual products in the makeup aisles and they would be five shades too light. And then my mom would actually prefer that. So she would put it on me because of colorism. And so it's just like so deep rooted for me. And then I remember just wanting to look like those girls at the time, because I'm a kid and I'm like, well, if this is what's going to be in the ads, then I need to look more like the ads. So I dyed my hair blonde. I got the blue contacts to fit into the beauty standards that I saw.
Wow. Okay. There's so much to unpack
here. All the things.
And you know what's crazy is like, I know that you're talking about beauty as in like what we're seeing and like not being represented there. But like I told you this, right, when I like voice noted you, where I was like, you know, when even like as a female brown founder, like there was really no one who looked like me, especially when I was younger. And
same.
Like,
I think the only person I saw was Indra Nooyi, who is the CEO of PepsiCo. Mm-hmm. And I'm nothing like her. So, I mean, she is incredible and such a boss and such a force. But like personality wise and hearing her speak, I just felt like I was so different. So mm-hmm. it intimidated me to think about, well, could I be a CEO? Could I do this? Because like, that's not my personality type. And so I do think it's important that people see an assortment of different kinds of founders who look so different. Like even between you and me, right? Brown girl to brown girl, we're different. And I think that's so important to see because women need to have that visualization of what they can be. And it's hard to see if you don't.
Yeah. Visualization, like person, like what you're saying about personality, you're so right. Right. Like, I mean, we grow up and we see so many representations of white women, for example, in seats of power. And there's so much for other white women to look to. And of course, like me as a brown woman as well, I have idols who are like, you know, other like other races and all of that.
Seeing women in period was so exciting, right?
Yes.
Like that was step one. It was like, wow, all these women in power, that's dope.
Mm-hmm.
Then step two was like, none of them look like me.
Yes.
Why?
Yes, exactly.
And then I think that's why I'm saying I wish I was sitting here interviewing you also, because I have so many questions for you because now we're new friends, you know? So, but I feel like I'm sure we went through the same journey of like, why not me?
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know, it's an interesting experience when that happens and you're like, nope, you know, it's the things that have set me apart that makes me different and beautiful and interesting.
Yeah, it became my superpower. It was like growing up, I was so insecure about having big eyes, my big old brows. I mean, all of those things, right? And now it's like feathery brows that are bushy are like in, big eyes are in. And every time I start, when I started my influencer journey, everyone told me that like my eyes were the thing that stood out the most. And again, I was so insecure about that as a kid.
It's so interesting how that works.
Yeah.
I want to talk about something that you touched on, which is colorism. Okay, which is when you're younger and that's the only thing that you know and like that's kind of like seen as like the standard of beauty. How did you come to terms with kind of breaking through that, I guess, and just like realizing that it was bullshit?
Well, so just to paint a picture, I was the girl who sat under an umbrella at the beach and layered like 15 layers of SPF that left a white cast on my skin because I was terrified of getting darker.
Mm.
I have a this memory like will be in my head forever. I was in the eighth grade. I lived in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I was hanging out with like a cool girl and she happened to be white and she was in the sun laying out in a bikini, which by the way, like a bikini, I didn't wear bikinis. Like it was, the layers of this are so funny to me now, but she was in a bikini and she was just tanning, no SPF on, no umbrella. And so I was like, I'm gonna do that because I don't know, I wanted to be cool like she was.
Mm-hmm.
I came home like 10 shades darker and my mom was bawling, crying. She was like so sad. And I was like, oh, I was tanning. Again, mm-hmm. all very new concepts to me, right? And I will never forget that moment. And you know, bless my mom. It's like, this is not like to shame her. She has this deep rooted into her head from what she saw growing up in India. And just the standards of beauty historically for like the past century, right?
Yes.
Like, and longer. And so I just think that I had this feeling and pit in my stomach that was just so oh my God, I can't believe that my mom is crying because of the color of my skin. And it just was like such an icky memory. And so I was like the age 16 when I told myself I wanted to change that.
How do you even go about changing that? And just to give our listeners like a little bit more context, speaking of this, when I was younger, I have a very distinct memory of going to a shop, and I'm from Bangladesh, okay? And I went to a shop in Dhaka, and the store attendants came up to me, and I was young, okay? And I didn't understand any of this.
Yeah.
And they came up to me and they're like, what do you use for your skin? Okay, they were asking a child this. They're like, you're so fair. What do you use for your skin? And I was like, I don't know, like soap. Yeah. And they were literally asking me for my skincare routine before I had a skincare routine. And like, this is like the extent to which this goes, where like, and I came up to my mom and I was like, they were asking me what I'm using on my skin. And it was, she was like, she didn't even get into it with me because I was too young to understand. But like, I mean, it's insane.
There was also a bleach cream, Fair and Lovely, that was my parents' counter that my mom would put on as moisturizer. It was literally, it has ingredients that are chemicals inside of it that literally bleach your skin. And yeah, I honestly think that that one product, which still is like a massive bestseller around the world and countries like India and Africa, is the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
And why I created Live Tinted.
Honestly, good for you. Like,
thank you.
It's like truly.
Any business owner knows that sound. I'm, of course, talking about Shopify's iconic sales sound, okay? Now, back in the day when Nish and I had just started Array, we used to leave the sound on our phone just so we could hear that sound because it meant that we had made a sale. And it was truly the most exciting sound as new business owners. And even now, sometimes we do it when we're looking for a little bit of motivation and maybe a little bit of a dopamine hit. We did it on Black Friday. We could only leave it on for like 2 minutes, but it felt really good nonetheless. So Shopify has already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. Shopify's POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. And guys, I can vouch for this. We actually have a Shopify POS system for any time we do things like pop-ups or anything like that. We're actually going to be using it in the next couple of weeks because we're selling in person at like a booth. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dreambigger, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dreambigger to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/dreambigger. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Dr. Will Cole. As a leading functional medicine practitioner, I have had the unique position to see so many alchemize their pain and health problems to their purpose. Now I want the same for you. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers, where there is a fresh infusion of grace and lightness into wellness. This is the art of being well. Join me every Thursday for a new episode.
So you were 16, you decided you wanted to change it. What happened? Like, how do you go about, because you really have been such a strong voice in changing this thought process. Like, when I think of someone who's bringing change to beauty standards, not just in terms of like a brown woman being visible to other brown women in a seat of power, but also as someone who's having important conversations around beauty in general, I really do think of you. So,
wow, thank you. That's really cool to hear, especially from a brown girl. I think I just feel like I had this delusional DeLulu level of self-belief in myself where I just told my parents I was going to do this. And I always felt like, why not me? And it, somebody needed to, right? Because literally we didn't have an example to look to. So every step of my journey was, okay, there's a problem. I need to fix it. So I'm going to major in marketing in college. I got an internship at the biggest beauty brand in the world, L'Oreal. And then I worked at Birchbox right out of college, which was like a really big beauty startup at the time. And then I became a beauty influencer and now I have my own beauty brand. So it's like one of those things where I feel so lucky that I knew at such a young age, this was my purpose. This is what I was meant to do because every step of my like career journey was designed to get me to the point of launching Live Tinted.
That's incredible. So just to give people context, talk to me about how you kind of made the switch from being a beauty influencer to then starting your own beauty brand.
I think it's even crazier that I went from like beauty executive to beauty influencer than to beauty brand founder, yeah. Right? Like, so seeing it from all three lenses was just the best business school, really. Like, it was like my version of a business school, which I like tell my parents all the time because they wanted me to go to Harvard so bad. But I recently spoke at Harvard, so it was really full circle for me. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is crazy how life comes full circle in that way. When I did the L'Oreal internship, they ended up not giving me a full-time offer, and then I was like in a L'Oreal commercial as an influencer, right?
Oh my gosh.
And hopefully they'll buy us one day. So it's one of those things that's just like crazy, you know, to think like the journey of what you thought it would be versus what it ends up being. Yeah. So I always knew I wanted to start this brand. Did I think I would have a viral YouTube video that would change my life and make me a beauty influencer? Of course not, because like influencer was so new then anyways, like that's not a thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was working in a beauty company and the world of YouTube was just popping off. And the same way I didn't see myself represented in the beauty industry from a beauty brand, I didn't see any beauty influencers that look like me. So it was like, this doesn't add up. There's an industry worth billions of dollars. There's a population of billions of people. And then there's this new social media platform called YouTube that's generating billions of dollars in ad revenue. Like, there is no one merging those three together. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of was just like, again, why not me? And picked up my iPhone one day and filmed a YouTube video that went viral. 10 million views later, I quit my job and did the beauty influencer thing full time.
Wow. Okay. And tell everyone what the video was.
I used a red lipstick under my eyes to mask dark circles. Did you see it?
I heard about it back when I was like doing my research and I was like, this is really incredible. And then I went on your YouTube and I couldn't find the video.
Well, yeah. So since then, you know, I need to, that's a whole other thing. Like, am I supposed to still be focused on YouTube? I don't know. Like, right? Like in the scale, there's 50
other. You got to pick. You know what I mean? Like there's only so much time. So I understand.
So much time. Oh my God. So yeah, that video was picked up by BuzzFeed and like, this was like the heydays of BuzzFeed. So it went viral and I used a red lipstick under my eyes to mask dark circles because a makeup artist used it on me once. She used an actual color corrector. And I'm not a makeup artist. I'm an everyday girl. And I was like, how can I simplify this? Why can't I just use the lipstick? What's the difference between a color corrector and a red lipstick? And obviously she named like 50 reasons why you shouldn't because of all the chemicals and all the bad things. But all I heard was like, you can. And so I did it and it works, right? Like, yes, the ingredients in it are not ideal. Obviously, when I created my own brand, I realized you have to fix a lot of stuff. But from a hack perspective, I was like, for the everyday girl, this is easy. Mm-hmm. So I did it. And yeah, it was a beauty hack that kind of kicked off this whole world of beauty hacks. Like this was when they, before that, right? This was 2015.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is like a long ass time ago.
And it's crazy to me to still have people come up to me and be like, you're the red lipstick girl. Oh my God. I will never forget that you. And you know, even when we launched at Sephora, they were like, that video created a whole category for us in stores that used to not exist because color correcting used to be such a makeup artistry product. And my hack made it accessible for the everyday girl.
Crazy. Wow. That's wild. So then from that video, like, how did you know, okay, like I want to launch a brand that does like specifically color correction?
I knew I always wanted to create a beauty brand for at least including women of color into it. But I didn't know I was going to start with that. But when that product happened, I was like, 10 million views, thousands of comments. Clearly there's an opportunity here. But I also realized I had this opportunity to build an audience. And there was women that were looking to me for advice. And as we both know, being a beauty influencer and building a company are two full jobs. Like, doing both at once, like we're doing right now, is not for the weak. And so at the time, though, at 2015, I was like, I need to lean into this audience, build an audience, really serve this audience, and then one day I will build this brand, mm-hmm. which was kind of scary, honestly, because I was getting offers from people who were like, you know, they saw a moment and they were like, create a product with us. But instead, I just partnered with a ton of other brands and kind of grew my audience and became, honestly, a brown girl that was like in every beauty ad campaign, MAC, Laura Mercier, Estee Lauder, Lancome, I mean, go down the list. And I worked with them, which was so cool. I mean, think about it. Like, as a kid, would you ever think that you would see a brown girl in a MAC campaign?
Yeah, it's insane.
And like, I was in a L'Oreal commercial. Like, it was just crazy, right? And I would get DMs. I still get these DMs, but in those days, it really was what I needed, because you're waking up every day and you don't have any schedule. You quit your job and now you're a full-time beauty influencer. So you have to have this like insane level of just like, I don't know, like just work ethic to mm-hmm. get out of bed and say, I'm going to choose to turn on this camera and film another video, not knowing if it would pay the bills. Like, it wasn't like somebody said, make this video, you're sponsored, you will make X amount of dollars for it. It was like, I had a viral video and now I'm trying to turn it into a full-blown career and mm-hmm. I have no idea how I'm going to pay my bills.
Yeah.
That's where I was at. And then eventually, you know, you just fake it till you make it. I emailed like 200 people that I had as contacts, because like this was when I lived in New York and I was like a networking machine when I worked at a beauty company. And I just contacted all of them and I was my own fake assistant, and I would like email all of them and it'd say, I represent Deepika Mutyala, on-air beauty expert and YouTuber. She would love to work with you and potentially use your products. Like, I mean, it was obviously me drafting all of this. And then one of them stuck, I will never forget. It was Bustle and CoverGirl. And they were like, what's your rate? And I threw out a number and they were like, okay, yeah, great. And I was like, damn it. I could have done like 3X this, but that's how I learned. I was like, you know what? I just threw out the number that I needed to survive for the month. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, it's like lesson learned, and also no regrets, because mm-hmm. it paid the bills. I learned a lesson and I grew from that.
Wow, that's incredible. You know, I didn't know that you were an influencer before you started your brand. I thought—
Oh my God, I love that you didn't know that.
Yeah, I thought you had the brand, and because you owned the brand, you were like one of these like CEO influencers.
Do you know how
happy
that makes me?
Like, I had no idea. I was like, oh, so this is how I thought your career went, okay? Viral video, start, live, tented, become also like influential because of your, you know what I mean?
And oh my God, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, that is a compliment, because it shows that you've built a really strong like beauty brand.
Well, to
you
me
know?
It's also a compliment, because like my dream is that Live Tinted outlives me, and it's
I have
like
the same dream.
It's like a legacy brand. Yes. That like people are pulling out of their bags and have no clue that I started it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I speak to so many founders and it's like all of us say the same thing, where I'm like, if someone comes up to me and they're like, you're the founder of Array, I'm like, thank you.
Thank like, you so much.
Thank you for knowing that Array existed before you ever knew who I was. Like, that's the best compliment.
That is the case with you and me. Like, yeah. Same way, I saw this Array brand. I was like, she's getting all the cool girlies to talk about it. Who is behind this? And then I realized afterwards, because of our mutual friend Radhi posted you, and I was like, wait, hold up. There's a brown girl behind Array? I was like, honestly, so impressed, because you got your product into the hands of all the cool girls.
Thank you.
That is not easy to do in this space.
That is not easy to do in any space.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, like,
totally.
But thank you. That really does mean a lot, because, I mean, you know, it's like a hustle to get your brand out there. It's a real grind.
It really is. And I think there's just something about the idea of one day I can just sit and watch people do like use the products and touch the products, and I can just, I don't know, I feel like I can retire in peace when that moment happens.
You know what's crazy is, like, still to this day I'm like, Array is like, it's like a baby, you know? And it is, of course, in the grand scheme
of things.
Like, my brand is like a little baby, okay? It's like nothing. But it's crazy when I'm out in the wild and someone's like, I like your bloat capsules are like, every day I use it, it's in my bag right now, and they whip it out. I'm like, in the wild? Like, this is crazy.
It's also funny to talk to you, and I'm sure vice versa. Like, I do not see you as a baby brand, but it's like all relative.
Yeah.
Right? It's all relative. It's like I'm looking at the Bobbi Browns and Laura Mercier's of the world.
Exactly.
Makeup by Mario's of the world. They're just so much bigger, but I also am proud of where we are and where I am in the journey. Because shit has not been easy. Like, it's still not easy, but the first 5 years were like, brutal.
How long have you had the brand now?
2019 was when we launched the Hue Stick, which was our first product, which again goes back to the red lipstick hack. It was like, okay, you know what? 3 years later, we're starting this company and there's still people asking me every day, how do I mask my dark circles?
You know what's interesting is that it was Nish who found your brand in 2020. And he's like, he sent it to me and he's like, Sif, look at this brand. They're so good at storytelling.
Wow.
And then I was like, I was looking at Live Tinted and I was like, this is phenomenal. Like the way that they've built, like you guys were like a playbook on community building.
Thank you. And I am proud of that because, yeah, we actually started as a community platform for a year before we launched anything.
Explain that.
So basically, when I was like, I'm ready to start a brand, I wanted it to be bigger than myself. And so instead of it being called Deep Beauty, which like as a kid, I used to doodle like D Pearl would be the name of my brand because my last name means Pearl.
Oh,
and
I love
so
that.
I thought it would be called Deep Pearl Beauty. And then when I went out to go get funding, everyone was like, I don't understand. You already have a following. Name it around you and it'll sell. Get the sales going and then scale it and then raise money. I just felt so strongly that it was important to me that this brand was something that like collectively made a whole community of people who never saw themselves represented finally seen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was called Live Tinted instead of Deep Pearl or Deep Beauty. It's like, no, I don't want this to be about me. It needs to be about you, me, anyone who hasn't seen themselves represented within this brand. And so it's a mantra to me, like living tinted is this idea and feeling of I finally feel seen by a brand, by the color of my skin. Like to me, the most important category that we do is complexion, because again, like I still think about that little girl who went down the makeup aisle and put on the foundation that was five shades too light for her. And so I take it very seriously. And so I wanted it to be in the literal name of the product and the brand is Living Tinted, because no matter how much we scale and grow, where, you know, we focused on for brown girls, then it went to people of color. And now it really is an inclusive brand that, like, especially with our partnership with Ulta, we have this whole new demographic of people, which is so exciting to me, right? Like, we did Jennifer Coolidge's makeup during the Oscars, which, by the way, so cool.
So cool.
But like the comments underneath it were like, I didn't know your products work on fair skin. And to me, that was like a big like, oh my gosh moment, because it is so important to me that everybody sees themselves in this brand, right? Like, I don't want to be like reverse inclusive, like where it's like we did over index on one side versus the other, because obviously the fair complexions don't have as much problem finding shades that work for their skin. That's just like even my employees that are Caucasian say that to me.
Yeah.
But it is such a good feeling to see the girlies pull out our products, like our SPF, in random people's hands. Like, Shawnee Darden had this, like, pickleball event, and everyone there, it was, like, all these cool girls, and they were all, like, your SPF is my absolute favorite. I died. I lost it. Oh, my God. She told me someone really, really famous said it was her favorite SPF.
Stop.
Because it was... to me, my like icon of life telling me, I guess what I'm saying is that like, I will never forget about who I started this for. Like with our most recent skin tint, we made the packaging brown because I knew that this was the turning point for the brand where we would actually scale and be touching a bunch of an audience that we didn't have before, the blonde hair, blue eye girls. And that's so exciting to me for a whole different way. Like to think of it as the reverse, right? Like growing up, I saw them in ad campaigns and I would buy their products and vice versa. And now I'm creating products that they're buying. Just feels really full circle.
Oh, that's so nice. That is full circle.
It feels amazing. And so it is important to me that Living Tinted resonates with everyone across the board. But as we scale and grow, I will always make sure that we prioritize people who look like you and me.
I love that. So then when you guys started out as a community platform, talk to me about what that meant. I actually want to give people kind of like the roadmap.
Yeah.
Because I think, again, like I think community is your strong suit and it speaks to everything that you've done and everything we just talked about. But like, how did you go from like having the spotlight on just you and then kind of shining it on the community?
Yeah. And it was an investment, right? Like, I think you have to expect that like if you're wanting to be a community centered beauty brand, you need to find a problem that resonates with a certain demographic of people that you feel like hasn't been tapped into. And then you need to actually invest in making them feel seen through your product or your whatever insert way that you're doing it here. So for me, it was again, like I went to investors and they were like, just make it about you. And I was just so certain that I didn't want the brand to be that. In the long term, I would have regretted it. So we raised a small $500K friends and family angel round, and it was like really just me bringing in every entrepreneur that had advised me over the years. And we had a few small VCs who kind of did their like small checks get in. And with that, we were focused on community building. It wasn't about the first it was like, how do we nurture and let these people feel seen? So we became like, to me, honestly, no editorial platform. This was back in the day, 2018. I didn't feel like any of the magazines were talking to me.
Mm.
So I kind of wanted to be this like goop for brown girls at the time. And I was like, okay, we're going to post every single day on Instagram, a face that people don't see. We're going to address a problem that people don't really talk about, like colorism, growing up with facial hair, being uncomfortable with the size of my nose or a unibrow. And like literally every day was a different post that addressed an issue that I didn't feel like any magazine was talking about.
Mm.
And that just started to bring in what was so exciting was it wasn't just Indian girls. It was I saw a girl, like a Middle Eastern girl, an African-American girl, a Mexican girl. And then when we talked about noses, then a Jewish girl would chime in. I mean, just like the way that you can bring people together around the conversation of beauty, around this like collective feeling was just so beautiful to me. And that's what we decided Live Tinted needed to stand for. It was mm-hmm. like, let's talk about the thing that nobody's talking about. So like, that's what we did for the first year. It was like just addressing and talking about what products make you feel seen. And so we started to then partner with other beauty brands. Like we did this event with CoverFX and Create and Cultivate plus Live Tinted, where we brought a room together of people to discuss like, why is it that beauty brands don't invest in shades beyond the like, fair skin tone group, I guess, at the time. And again, like Fenty had just released at the time, so it was a hot topic, which was really great. But like, it's so annoying to me when I hear people say, well, Fenty already did it. Do you say that to Laura Mercier and Bobbi Brown? Like, do you think that it's okay that there's just a singular brand that's one in doing it like that? Like,
yeah, it should be everyone.
It should be everyone. And there should be more than one woman of color founded brand that wins. You know?
Absolutely.
And the sad part is you can name it on one to two hands right now.
It's actually insane. There needs to be more.
A collective. There
Absolutely.
Needs to be so many of us. Because again, like I saw one person that was a CEO of a company and it wasn't a beauty company. So it's so important to me that young girls growing up today see me win.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know it's going to help them see themselves win, you know? So it just feels like I'm going, it really does feel like this is beyond me. And so, yeah, like when it came to actually launching our first product, we were like, okay, now we need to actually make money instead of spend money.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything we were doing in that first year was just burning cash, right? Like we were like an editorial platform.
Yeah.
But we had this really engaged community who really, really like look forward every day to our posts and our weekly newsletter, which was really, really awesome. Also, one thing I didn't mention was, what I did to get this even kickstarted was on my Instagram stories, I said, I am struggling to find a deeper skinned South Asian woman anywhere on the internet. Under the hashtag Live Tinted, please tag me in any photos that you see that represent this. Within 30 minutes, 200 people used the hashtag Live Tinted.
Wow.
It was like, it gives me chills to still think about it because to me, it's like women are screaming and wanting to see themselves represented and nobody was doing it for them. So people were just like actively like, look at this model, look at this girl, look at this. And I discovered so many people who I'm now friends with, Seema Hari, Nidhi Sunil, like there are these models out there, right? And again, this was back in 2018, like before Bridgerton and Simone Ashley. And, you know, luckily we have more of the representation now. But back then I was like 200 people used hashtag Live Tinted. In the first year, 40,000 people used hashtag Live Tinted.
Big deal.
It was a collective. It was like, for me, it was like, oh my gosh, people just are using this as a movement and a way to live tinted. And so, yeah, when it came to the actual product, we kind of just asked, what's your number one beauty concern? And it was still 98% said dark circles. And there was no fancy agency. It was literally an Instagram poll. So the thousands of people who already followed us told us that dark circles were still the biggest beauty issue. Mm-hmm. So between my video 3 years ago, where I had 10 million views, and then this, you know, poll that we did, it was like, all right, we got to create a solution around color correcting.
That's wild. It's like such a nicely packaged up, you
Crazy,
know, like
right?
Here's the first product.
Yeah,
like,
and it was so genuine.
Sense.
It was authentic.
Yeah.
It wasn't just
Hell
like,
yes.
oh, I'm going to create a, you know, I don't know, a face wash. Like, that would be so random, even though face washes do really well, moisturizers do really well, mascaras do really well. Those are, like, the loyalty products people really, like, come back to in beauty. I was like, I'm going to create a product that doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's, like, authentic to your story, I feel like, and yeah. the story that you had, like, even before the product launched, created for Live Tinted, which is so interesting.
Yeah, and honestly, the day one, we sold our projections for the whole month, which was, like, so awesome because we took a bet. We created a product that didn't exist. It was a multi-stick that you can use as an eye, cheek, and lip, but also use it as color corrector. Mm-hmm. So it was like, how do I make color correcting accessible to the everyday girl? Let's make it into a multi-stick. And again, it didn't exist. So that's why, like, you know, we've won a Allure Best of Beauty for it. It's really exciting, but a huge bet, to be clear.
Yeah. You know, I want to, like, this, what you're saying, like, I want to zoom in on this because, you know, we were both at the Glossy Pop conference, right? So I spoke like two panels after you.
Yeah.
And this actually came up in the conversation where it was like, what's better, to launch product in a saturated or an unsaturated space where like nothing like it exists, right? And like,
what'd you say?
I think that there's pros and cons to both.
Agreed.
I think it depends on who you are. Your brand should be authentically you, right? But what I said was, we're category builders, okay? We're like you. When we launched Bloat, there was no bloating product on mm-hmm. the market, right? And so when you're launching a new product that has not existed, what you have to do is a ton of audience education. Like mm-hmm. when we came up, there were no cool supplements. That mm-hmm. was not a concept. So when you're the first to do it, it's like you're taking a bet. Of course, you would have, like, you can have first mover's advantage, which is an amazing thing.
Yeah.
But also
you're doing a lot of work and then a lot of competition follows.
Yes, yes. But, you know, like, the work that you're having to do is really educate people as to, like, what the product does, why you need it, like, things that haven't been done. Like, today I can launch clothing. Like, if it was authentic to me, I would kind of know the story to tell. And, like, the education has been done about why you need a sweatshirt. You know, it's just about making it my own.
Yes.
Versus...
Here's why you even need a Bloat product.
Yeah, like, this is a brand new fucking product.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean? It's a whole, and so same thing for you. Like, this is why you need a color, this is what a color corrector is.
Yeah, you know? And you know, I that's why I think it is a healthy, good discussion, because do I think I would have sold more quicker and with less resistance from even labs and everything if we launched with the concealer? Maybe. And, like, when we went to Sephora, did they say, like, you need to launch a concealer ASAP? Yes. Like, did they say no to us when we first went to them because of that? Yes. So I do think it all has to be authentic to you, but also the opportunity in front of you. Like, for example, a lot of celebrities who launch brands start with, great example is Selena Gomez. She launched with like 80 to 100 SKUs. Don't quote me on that, but she launched with a shit ton of products.
Mm-hmm.
But what she did so beautifully, which I give her so much credit, honestly, like, there's plenty of celebrity brands that I think are just thrown into the market because it's a money grab, but there's ones that are really done well.
I agree. I think Rare Beauty is one of them for sure.
100%. First of all, she got a really stellar team behind her. She got the whole NYX Cosmetics team. She did a lot of great there's a great fund, like, investment behind her. And then she has this whole story around, you know, like, there's a Rare Impact Fund. Mental health is so honest to her and her story. So, like, I just think it can be done in different ways. For me, color corrector had to be what I started with.
Yes.
Whether it's the product that ends up, like, changing our business in the long term or not, to be determined, but I feel like I will always feel like I did this brand my way, and I'm proud of that because I was genuine about how it got started.
Yeah, and I think that that's how it should be. Like, I think that my biggest takeaway from being a founder is that, you know, you have to be motivated by more than just the prospect of money,
mm-hmm.
because then what happens when you make the money? Like, then what keeps you going, you know? And like, what keeps you going through the really hard days? It has to be that you yourself are so passionate about your business, you know? Like, I would live and die for Array. You know what I mean?
Everyone who I feel like has exited or made their money and are on the other side, they go through huge depression.
Oh my God,
it's like, now what? That was my whole purpose in being.
Exactly. And so...
it's a lot, yeah.
It is a lot. And so my thing is that, like, whatever it is that you choose to do, I think it just has to be guided by, like, purpose.
So do I. And it's interesting because... there are plenty of brands that aren't, and mm-hmm. they're just, you know, we live in a capitalistic society, and they are money grabs. And I just think for me, I feel so much more fulfilled to say that my brand exists for something beyond myself.
I agree.
But on the flip side, it is a beauty brand. And I have to be honest about that too, because I do think that, like, for me, the existence of it is like a love note to my younger self. That's all very honest and very true. But, you know, sometimes I go through this whole, like, do we really need another beauty brand out there? And that's why storytelling is so important to me. It's like, why did I launch this product? Why did I launch a eyeliner? Because a Kajal was the first product ever used on me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And I want to tell that story and pay homage to like my mom and putting that on me to rid me of the evil eye, which we believe in Hinduism as a way to like rid the evils of the world. And so I think what you said, I can't believe your husband found us through that vehicle of storytelling, because that to me is the most important part of the brand. Like, we used to have a series where people came into my garage. We had everyone from like a brown wrestler to a gender nonconforming artist to Steph Shep, like the range of people who came to my garage to film this series called Hue to Know, where I just wanted to tell stories that hadn't been told before.
I love that.
And now it's like, how can I do that through my beauty products?
I love that. That's the goal. So nice. Okay. I want to get into audience questions.
Okay. Oh, yay.
Yeah. So we got some really good ones. So number one, what are some struggles you faced early on with Live Tinted and how did you overcome them?
A little bit of a imposter syndrome when it came to being a CEO specifically. Mm-hmm. I think for me, being a CEO, I felt like I had to do it to make my parents proud. I felt like I needed to do it because I needed other young girls to see a brown girl in a position of power. But I didn't know if I actually wanted to do it beyond those reasons. And honestly, I'm still going through that in therapy now. Like we said, people who are on the other side of their journey who say, you need to just do what makes you happy. So now I'm looking at the business and I'm thinking about what parts of the business genuinely make me happy and then outsource for the other parts of it. And I didn't know back then what that was in the early days. And so I think I made a lot of wrong decisions because I just felt like I had to be in this position versus hiring people that could probably do it better than me. And I think there's just something so beautiful about being the founder. And I used to feel shame around that if I wasn't the CEO. It's very interesting. And it all goes back to how I was raised for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting that you say that. And I do think like, especially like when you're starting out, like you are kind of used to doing all of the jobs and, you know, you feel so much pressure to do them to full perfection. So maybe you don't want to bring someone in. But like,
yeah,
at the end of the day, like there's people who can be doing certain functions much better than you.
100%. The other struggle I had was raising capital. It was really hard because I feel like I'm a really good salesperson. And I feel like what I'm selling is like an obviously, this brand should exist in the world, but convincing a lot of white men was really hard. But I also don't want to so much dig on it because the investor I have that is my lead now is a white man and he's a fantastic guy. So, you know, it all comes full circle, but the journey of raising capital was really fucking hard.
Okay, that's actually one of the questions that we got. So I want to get into your journey of raising capital because let me tell you, it's not a fucking picnic.
0% that. And it's just so draining. You're literally sitting there pitching the same thing over and over and over and over again, waiting for someone to have it stick. And I think the toughest part for me was when I want to make sure I say this the right way, because I think it's so important that brown women support and stick together with other brown women. I think the most hurtful no's were when they came from brown women. Mm. Because I felt like if you don't see this, how am I supposed to convince that white man to see this?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think to this day it still hurts. Granted, now on my cap table, I have an amazing group of brown women who put their own capital into it, not even their funds, but their own personal checks.
Wow.
But it was really hard. I remember crying walking out of one pitch that I did because she said that I needed to think bigger. And it just, it was, yeah. But so yeah, it was, so then you're going through like an emotional journey around all of that too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay because, you know, I need to separate the actual race from this and actually realize that today on my cap table, I have a lot of great people that are all different ethnicities, black, white, brown, everywhere in between. And so where I am now on the other side of it, I'm very proud of it. But whew, that journey was tough. I think the coolest one was getting Bobbi Brown on my cap table because—
Incredible. She's like a beauty veteran. What the hell?
Icon. Yeah.
Insane. So— do you have tips for someone who is going through the fundraising process?
Yeah, I think first of all, really question whether you want to raise money at all from institutional investors. Initially, think the best thing to do, and I know this is a privileged statement, not everyone can, is to go through friends and family or put in your own money, because the second you give away a piece of your company, you're giving away privilege in your company, rights of your company, power in your company. And you have to decide, do you really want to do that? Do you really want someone else to make the call? And also in the early days, the valuation that you get and for your company before you have proof of concept is going to be lower. So you're giving up a fatter chunk of your company. So I would say really question whether you need to raise institutional funding. And then if you decide, no, I don't, then go to friends and family. And if you can, put in your own money if mm-hmm. possible.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, next question. For someone who is starting a beauty brand, what advice do you have on how to broaden their network?
Oh, how to broaden their network. I mean, I just feel like be shameless. Like, go to everyone's DMs. Like, don't care. Like, I think that's the other thing as brown women. Like, we're so scared to speak up, honestly. And I think that like, it's changing, thank God. But be shameless about it. Go into all of those DMs and just 99% of the people say no, but then the one Bobbi Brown will, which mm-hmm. is what happened for me.
I love that. That's actually very, very sound advice. And like, I always say this, even from like, I get questions on like, oh, like, how do you make friends when you move to a new city? And I'm like, it's the same thing, you know, like you reach out to people and like you say yes to things before you know it, you've found your people. And like from a business or like career capacity, it's the same thing that you find the people who want to take a bet on you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, love that.
Wait, I literally started my relationship with Bobbi Brown through the DMs. So go in the DMs.
You heard it here first. Okay, so the last question that we have time for actually is, how do you balance social media while running a business?
Oh gosh, this was also asked at the Glossy Summit also.
Oh, okay, great.
And I literally said, I'm figuring it out as we speak. Because like, so I have my week scheduled where it's like every Wednesday is my content day. Tuesday, Thursdays are my Live Tinted meeting days. I usually travel on Fridays and Mondays are like my catch up days. Obviously, that's not a perfect system. I'm here today on a Tuesday. It's like not a perfect system. But I will say that it is the hardest struggle. And every founder I know that is also a content creator, it's their biggest struggle also, because switching back and forth is so hard. How do you go from a board meeting to like doing a TikTok?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like you have to try to create structure in your days to make it so you don't have to switch back and forth whenever possible. But it's hard. I actually stopped doing influencer stuff a lot last year because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm still figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a perfect system. I think you just like you work it out as you go. People have different systems as well. I feel like it's not like a one size fits all. So, you know, we're all just trying to figure it out.
Totally.
This was amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having
Everyone's going to learn so much and they're going to love you.
That makes me happy.
Thank you so much for listening. If you loved the episode and feel like it brought you value, don't forget to rate the show and leave a review. It takes 5 seconds and really helps the show grow so I can keep bringing on awesome guests. If you want to follow me behind the scenes, you can find me on Instagram at Sif Hyder. And don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss a thing. I drop new episodes every Tuesday, so come hang with me and shoot the shit with some really smart people, learn and unlearn, and have a lot of fun. See you next week.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.